Puro.
I requested you, all of you, to go and grab a cup of tea so that you can feel at home, and you're not doing that. I don't know why. In my culture, we can't. When you are offered something to eat, it's a matter of must in my culture that you adhere to the request. So can you please go and grab a cup of tea?
Hey, did you welcome to the meeting? I think our meeting is not going to take long with you.
I think there are just minor issues to tighten up. Yesterday we had the AG's office here, and truly speaking, we said to the AG's office, don't even touch the entities, because to me, I went through all your reports, but there are a few things that we need to clarify with you, that we need to tighten up the screws that are not too tight. Though you have minor issues, we need to deal with them. And we'd like to thank you for availing information to the DG's office, because that's what the DG's office said, to say you were transparent when it comes to information, and we really like to thank you for that. Honorable members, I think without any waste of time, we need to allow CIDB to be transparent to us and give us what's necessary, what we need, and if there are problems, litigation problems there and then, you need to mention them and don't hide anything. Our motto in this committee is that transparency and the truth should prevail. Over to you. Thank you very much. I think you can introduce yourself. I'm Catherine, Mama.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm Maggie Madlala. Thanks. I'm Doris Nguyen, member of this portfolio committee from Gauteng.
Thank you, Chairperson. I am Lennox Gaylor, member of this portfolio committee. Thank you.
I'm Tsezi Wey, King Madloka, a member of this portfolio.
I am Emmanuel Makubane, a member of this portfolio committee.
Unomathemba kaNovemba, ilungu lale committee.
Francine Nathan, member of the committee.
Good morning, I'm Pam Bini from PMG.
Good morning, I am Bafan Ndela, the chairperson of the CIDB.
Good morning, my name is Peter Mongwenyala. I'm the acting CEO for the CIDB.
Good morning, my name is Imba Thambiran. I'm with the CIDB, program manager.
Good morning, my name is Sekisang Monti Ritibane. I'm the acting program manager for construction readiness service.
Good morning, my name is Gerard Naidu. I'm a program manager at CIDB for growth and contractor development.
And thank you very much. Dabi, can you take over?
Thank you so much, Chair. And thank you so much for your warm welcome and your kindness about the coffee. And I will always keep that in mind. I am the chairperson of the CIDB, as introduced earlier on. We thank this opportunity that has been presented to us to present matters around the Construction Industry Development Board, established in terms of the Act number 38 of 2000. Today, we are going to hear from the team that I brought in to you the presentation, which is going to deal with the legislative framework and the mandate of the CIDB. The highlights for the financial year of 2010 and 2011, performance summary, which will be on construction register services, the growth and contractor development, the construction industry performance, the procurement and delivery management, and also the financial performance, or the AG report financial performance, consisting also of the report of the AG and the corrective action plan. The CIDB board is, in terms of the act, non-executive, and therefore all the execution of the programs of the CIDB are done to the executive of the CIDB, who I'm going to hand you over to. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson, honorable members, thank you for the opportunity for the CIDB to present the 2010-2011 annual report. As Mr. Ndendwa has already indicated, the program will follow. Well, we've already done the introductions. We'll now go into the highlights for the financial year. We will not touch on the legislative framework, as it's quite familiar with all of us, I think, by now. That is the mandate of the CIDB, which is to provide strategic leadership to the industry. The areas of training and contractor development is the first area that we are going to touch on. During the financial period, we have facilitated training through various interventions, such as injecting funding for strategic training opportunities. And these are actually, I hope members have already received the annual report, because this is also indicated on page 70 to 72 of the annual report, which elaborates on the various interventions that we've actually come up with. Contractor development has been recommended for consideration as a national priority, and in this regard, a steering committee has been formed between the CIDB and the National Department of Agriculture. By the end of the financial period, we were still going through the formative stage of this steering committee, but I must also report that the committee has already concluded its work, and the NCDP will actually be launched within the next 3 weeks. I think the Minister of Public Works will also be involved with regards to this. Provinces will also be roped in for inclusion regarding improved reporting on all contractor opportunities, because we found this to be quite a huge challenge in terms of obtaining information from the provinces about the progress on contractor development programs that are actually taking place. This obviously will be elevated to the HOD level and the MINMEC fora. The review of the registration criteria, I think one of the areas that are of interest to a lot of the people in the country, including the members in this house. We embarked on we set up a task team between the CIDB and Black Contractor Associations to look at all the issues that have actually been raised, the concerns that have been raised about contractor development. There's been issues around downgrading of contractors and the restrictive nature of the regulations that the CIDB has got in place right now. A consultative process has been finalized to improve these registration criteria, and the board, our board, has actually approved the amendments. Now, a submission is due to the department to take the next step of process in the proposed amendments. I must add here that subsequent to this, the submission has already been submitted with the department. I think as we go through the deliberations and when members get the opportunity to actually pose questions and all that, we'll be able to explain further about this process. But safe to say at this stage that it is now with the department for processing. And those amendments They entail the following. Briefly, and this is also indicated in our annual report on page 42. Qualified persons, contractors will not be required to provide proof of registered professional at the TIDB registration stage. Annual turnover, qualifying values will be reduced, will be reduced. Largest contractor, the track record, the value of the largest project completed to be reduced, and the annual tender value limit adjustment regulations to make provisions for tender value limit adjustment and proportional registration criteria adjustment. The method B will be done away with and removed from the regulations. Over and above this, if I could also report that we have now recently submitted, together with these amendments, a moratorium on the downgrading in the interim, a request for moratorium, so the department will still have to process this as well and take it through the motions through the policy unit. The next point is improving the efficiency and effectiveness of the register of contracts. The register of contracts, which you could actually view as an engine of the CIDB, because that's what runs the entire registration process. We are in the process of reinventing or rewriting the entire system, as we found to have a lot of, the current system has got a lot of limitations in it. As you'll remember, I think we've reported previously in this committee and other committees to say that the current registration capacity that we have, we're sitting at about 100,000 registration about, whereas the system was actually designed to cater for far much less than that. And we've had to do a lot of tweaking and adjustment on the system. So hence now a really properly designed system is needed, you know, for the CIDB to look into the future, the next 10 years or so. The rewrite is now in progress. We should finish the whole project on or about February of next year, and it also includes the electronic document management system. To read further about this, you can also go to page 41 of the annual report. Industry performance and best practices. The various components of the best practice contractor recognition scheme and best practice assessment schemes are at various stages of piloting. And currently, the board is also looking at this. The department has also been brought into the picture in terms of consultation processes that must take place before the implementation of this. Compliance enforcement. The industry continues to be plagued by various forms of fraud and corruption, and the CIDB has established disciplinary procedure to deal with contractors and clients who fail to comply with the code of conduct or participate in fraudulent activities. That's on page 52 of the annual report as well, where we're listing, you will see, you know, the nature of the activities or fraudulent activities that are taking place within the CIDB, and the actions that have actually been taken, you know, through the disciplinary steps, because we have in place an investigation committee that administers the whole process of adjudicating through all issues that have actually been brought to our attention and for contractors and clients to actually be fined. Another issue is that the CID regulations, and I think it's becoming very serious at this stage with the CIDB, that the regulations are mandatory for all public sector infrastructure clients. However, very poor levels of compliance with the CIDB regulations have been noted. Recently, we've even gone to the extent we're looking at your register of projects, the iTender register of projects, for example. And recently, we've actually gone into an audit blitz. Ms. Stambiran will actually be able to explain to us further, you know, about this issue. But what it entails is that we took a sample, a an audit sample looking at all public sector within the public works environment, and to look at the compliance level in terms of completion of the I-tender or register of projects and all that. And I think you know, the results are very concerning because you're looking at almost 100% non-compliance, I think, at this stage. The investigation is in progress, as I say, we'll be able to share further, you know, with through Mr. Kambira from her program. And this is really, really very, very concerning. I think the chairperson has also indicated his concerns about the state of the situation. The board has also indicated its displeasure about this. Recently, I think about 3 weeks back when we had the board meeting, these results of these investigations were actually presented, and the board was very, very shocked to see what is going on out there. I must also hasten to say that we are in contact and have interactions with the department itself about these issues, and now recently where we sat down with the department, and I think there was a feeling in the department itself to say that we also need to be very brutally honest with each other about these things, and start you know, not nest each other because now we are within public works, or that public works is your principal department, you can't say some of these things and all that. And also the charity is going to start at home. Let's start at home, let's get it right within the public works family, and then we can start talking to other departments. Research and academic excellence, 2 universities have been appointed as centers of excellence to support the research agenda, and youth will benefit from this initiative as the ultimate aim is to expose students to research and try and retain them at tertiary institutions. The audit outcome is another matter. The CIDB has achieved a now qualified report. However, there were matters of emphasis which dealt with fruitless and wasteful expenditure and irregular expenditure. This we will touch on further on when we go into the AG report. The predetermined objectives, which I would also like to talk more about at this stage, objectives have been identified as an area requiring particular attention. Auditors identified shortfalls in terms of compliance with National Treasury Framework, the SMART concept. In the current financial year for 11-12, the predetermined objectives will become part of the audit opinion, because at this stage all we have it is part of the report but not of the opinion, but it indicates where we are in terms of if we were to be audited and given an opinion, I think would actually be found very wanting in this area. Board is taking particular interest in this, and what we've actually done is that for 11-12 predetermined objectives, we are busy revising, not the targets. The targets have been set. This committee has approved those targets. Obviously, we've contracted with this committee about those targets, but it's more about the structure, you know, to be SMART compliant. And we've already also elevated this to the minister's office for assistance as soon as we've done, because we're doing an assessment, and we're going to correct this to comply with SMART and then resubmit to the minister for approval, the executive authority, as is required in terms of the Act. And then we should be in line in terms of audit and compliance, you know, and be ready for the AG when the time comes for next year's audit. So that corrective action plan has actually been put in place, and we are actually executing that. Corporate governance and the accounting authority, a new board has been appointed in April, and all board subcommittees have also been appointed. In that they've all been inducted and they're fully operational now. The establishment of the construction contact centers, we are left with only one construction CCC office in the country, and that is in the Northwest. And I'm happy to report that in the next 2-3 weeks, I think a week of the 24th to 26th, we should be launching that office now, finally. Stakeholder management. The National Stakeholder Forum, as is also required by the Act, was held in October 2010. And over and above this, we've also established what we call provincial stakeholder workshops. And these have actually set during the course of the year, except in two provinces. And we're going through liaison with the MEC's offices to complete the whole cycle of interaction with the stakeholders. Also to report on this point is that the current stakeholder members are actually out of term, so we need to appoint new stakeholders. So in the current year, we cannot hold a stakeholder forum because the members are not actually, membership is not valid, if you can put it that way. So we are in the process of actually appointing new members. We are advising the minister now about that position, but we are not able to hold the stakeholder forum in October, that is the norm, but we are going through a process of appointing new members. And also the structure of the stakeholder forum, we're proposing an amendment or a change to the way we've actually been doing it in the past. Whereas we used to have only one session of the National Stakeholder Forum, and now there's a proposal that the new board has actually proposed that we should have one session where submissions would be made, or CIDB would actually be receiving submissions from the stakeholders about the issues in the construction industry. And thereafter, we'll have another session whereby the CIDB will then respond back on those issues that have actually been raised. As well, in terms of composition of the stakeholder forum membership, there will be a drive to ensure that there's as wide as possible an inclusion of all stakeholders in the industry, from established in business and also the emerging sector, including union membership as well. The next slide will go through the individual core program areas, and these are matters that I've already highlighted the specific areas that we wanted to talk to you about. And I think if members pick up any specific issues that they would like to talk to, you can always raise it up with us in the course of the meeting or in the question and answer session. So I'd like to skip this section. For example, if you go through CRS, we've already spoken about the registration process and the system enhancements that we actually go through, the registration, regulation amendments process that we went through. Are you with me? I'm not losing you there. Okay. So I'm gonna skip through all these sections here until we get to the other area. I'll give you the page number just now, which is financial performance, page 34. Page 34 of the slide. It will say financial performance AG report 2010-11.
Slide 34.
Yeah. Page 17. Sorry. Yeah. Oh yeah, because we got two slides in one page. That's what. Yes. Page 17. On the overview of the financial performance, we go through the our budget performance in terms of fund usage, and the annual financial statements analysis, the report of the AG, and the opinion, as I indicated, emphasis of matter in regular expenditure, will explain what happened here and how we're planning to deal with the issues, and the corrective action plan, and the fruitless and wasteful expenditure in particular. Financial performance, actual versus budget for the 2010-11 financial year. Our total revenue budgeted was 104,357,000. We actually collected 113,711,000, and there's a positive variance of 9 million. And the 9 million mainly came as a result of the over-recovery of registration fees. Out of the registration fees of 38.2 million that we expected, we collected 45 million, and with a positive variance of 6.8 million. And the other positive variance comes from the interest that we've collected, giving you the 9.3 million. Total expenditure for the period, we've had total expenditure budget of 104 million, with 103 million as actual, and an underspend. There's a mistake here. It should be it's 1 million. I'll do the calculation just now. But there is an underspend on the budget of about 1 million. On the financial performance for the annual financial statements, if we analyze them, revenue from government has increased by 7% from 59.2 million in the previous year. Revenue from registers decreased by 4% from the previous year if you look at actual to actual. So we've collected less revenue in the current financial year than the previous year. However, we've done better than on our budget, you know, for the current year. Total expenditure increased by 16% compared to the previous year. The bulk of this increase relates to staff costs and admin costs, which increased by 8 million and 1.9 million respectively from the previous year. Finance income, interest increased by 10% from 3.7 million in the previous year. And our surplus for the year is 10 million. In the previous year, we had 21 million. I must also mention that the surplus that we've actually retained now, we've applied to National Treasury for a rollover of these funds, and we've been granted approval for those funds to be retained. Cash and cash equivalent increased by 18 million from 62.3 million, and the bulk of this is on investments, which grew by 17 million. The accounts payables and income received in advance, total payables increased by 3 million from 15 million, and income received in advance increased by 2.3 million from 24 million. This income received in advance, just for information, relates to the prepayments, you know, that we received from contractors for as part of registration fees. Now going on to the report of the Auditor General. As indicated, the CRDB receives an unqualified report for 2010-11 financial year. There are emphasis of matters issues on irregular expenditure to the tune of 9.2 million relating to various matters as reported by the AG for 2010-11 financial year. The first item relates to the finance lease. The finance lease, in short, National Treasury has actually granted us condonation on this lease that we had entered on. CRDB entered into a 5-year leasing arrangement with a service provider for the rental of 7 printers in order to support the day-to-day activities. Now, in terms of, if you go to the next paragraph, the non-compliance with loss 32.2 received prior approval from the Minister of Finance before entering into finance lease agreement, which limits finance agreement to no more than 36 months. So we entered into a 5-year lease instead of a 3-year lease, and we went back to the National Treasury to request condonation. We were granted condonation, and Treasury did indicate that no one should be held responsible or penalized for that. So that has been condoned in this case. Now, the second item of 2.5 million relates to transactions where we should have given notice to National Treasury and the AG because they were all above 1 billion rand. It was an oversight on our side. The officials responsible have actually been disciplined for this oversight, so to speak, and we have subsequently advised National Treasury and the AG about these transactions. The next lot relates to the 5.2 million, which is the legacy contract that the CIDB has had in place for a number of years, and for which we could not immediately exit as we really needed those services, you know, at that point in time. One example is with regards to traveling. If you look at our traveling bill, it's about 2 million at least in a year. On a daily basis, there's traveling that takes place, employees going to different places. So it would have been difficult for us and really cumbersome for the supply chain management unit to really request three quotations every time somebody had to travel. The board was made aware about this issue, and a conscious decision was taken to say, continue with this contract, but move very fast to ensure that the tender process takes place to replace them. And subsequent to that, these contracts have actually been tendered for and have been replaced. It's related to travel, it's related to rental of furniture, it's related to security services. Those were the main ones that we had to deal with. If you go to page 44, that will be on the slide 22. The AG has raised a number of issues in the management letter report for 2010-11 financial year. In response to these matters, the CIDB has designed a corrective action plan, which sets down the timelines within which issues will be resolved, who the responsible officials to resolve the issue, who the responsible officials are to resolve the issues, and the specific action to be taken to resolve the issues. And the monitoring is performed by the CFO, CEO, and the audit committee and the board. The next page, management letter report and corrective action plan. Oh, 22, it would have been?
44.
Yes, page 22, slide 44, yes. Now we are on slide 45. Over and above the corrective action plan, the AG has developed a key controls document which we, from time to time, on a quarterly basis to be specific, we will actually be going through the document in terms of progress, monitoring, and here the board chairperson is also involved in the process. If I can just jump onto slide number 46 with regards to the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, which is 262,000 rand. The biggest element of the fruitless expenditure, which is 203,000, was mainly due to capacity problems experienced in the registrar's unit during investigations that led to key staff being suspended in the program and leaving the filing storage cost escalating beyond the agreed limit. So the responsible officials were put on suspension, and during that time, these costs escalated. However, right now we have actually dealt with the matter. There are people, staff that are responsible for this contract now, and it is under control. And the remainder of the fruitless expenditure, 13,000 and 45,000, relates to staff cell phone costs that were stolen. This we can't recover, just beyond our control, the 13,000, you know, for staff cell phones costs stolen. And the bad debts written off respectively. Those relate, I think if you remember last year, we had the same issue. You might have the same issue next year, I can tell you now. But that should be the third year, and because we're phasing it out over 3 years. After year three of next year, then we shouldn't have this anymore. This happened a number of years ago, about 4 years ago, when CIDB, when we didn't actually have proper controls in terms of refunding contractors, and refunds were made that were not even due to those contractors that we refunded. Now we've put controls into place. I think subsequent to that cut-off period, we've not had any such occurrences or incidents taking place. And I think that concludes our presentation. We would welcome any comments, questions, and observations from members.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Honorable members, before giving you time to interact, I just want to highlight to CIDB that on the 26th of July, I think this is very important for me to remind you, we expected you to accompany us to the Eastern Cape. On that particular day, the hall was full of contractors who wanted their problems to be responded to be dealt with. And to our disappointment, even the regional rep was not there. Your regional rep was not there. And the situation wasn't okay. And it was not even safe for us in that environment to say, can you, as CIDB, make a day to the Eastern Cape? There are major problems that you need to deal with. And I remember when they warned us to say, should their issues not be attended to, they are going to revolt. And then we don't want to see that happening. Can you please make a promise that you will go there and deal with their problems? Honorable members, over to you. Will you want to respond?
Yes, thank you so much. Unfortunately, we were not aware of the visit. I found out about the visit afterwards. Yes, we have come to recognize the problems that I experienced in the Eastern Cape. I've had some kind of communication with them, and we certainly will feed you back in a matter of another 4 weeks to say what is it that has been done in that area. In fact, it will also form part of our, as mentioned by the CEO, what we want to do on the stakeholder forum. We don't want now to find the stakeholder forum where the CIDB goes and informs the forum about what is it that it is doing. Would like the stakeholders to inform us of their concerns, what is it that their concerns are, and then 6 months later would like to report back again to those stakeholders and inform them what is it that we did with their concerns. We think that by so doing we'll be able to serve them and we take the CIDB to them, being sensitive as well to the area that there are general complaints that people are having about the CIDB that we feel that need quite immediate attention. Thank you so much.
Honourable members, over to you. Baba Gaila, Honourable Gaila, Honourable Stole, Honourable Stenis, Honourable Nguane, Honourable Baba Magubani, in that order. Okay. Baba Magubani.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Mike, Baba.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question is around fraud and fronting. How far have you gone with the investigation concerning fronting? Because you find that big guys, they are always using black people to front for them, and then afterwards they are being paid peanuts. And I regard that as fraud. And if that company is being found that he is guilty of such cases, what steps do you take? Do you suspend them? Or you just cancel them from the contractor list? And if you expel them, how many years or how many months do you expel them? And then what is it that you do for the person who has been fronting for those big companies? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. First of all, we want to thank the CIDB for briefing us about their progress and their programs. Thank you for this information. But, Chair, I can be happy if the CIDB can tell us about this downgrading of contractors. How many? And what was the cause of those downgrading of contractors? And we were at Northern Cape. All contractors, they say it was better in previous government because of the treatment that they are receiving from CIDB. That was their concern, and it became our concern. Now we want to find out, what are you doing to help those contractors, especially in Northern Cape? And Chair, when you check your annual report on page 52, you talk about education public sector client of the legislative requirement by hosting training and awareness campaigns. What I want to find out, how many training have you done, and how many campaigns have you done, and from which provinces, because we want to get those. And Chair, on your slide number 24. Slide number 24, on your presentation. You talk about the establishment of employment skills development agencies, and then you say you are going to support the youth in construction. What I want to find, how many youth have been supported by you in construction, and from which provinces? And other one, Chair, is on slide number 44. Slide number 44, I want to understand actually the collective action plan that you talk about here. If you can give us those collection plan, what have you done? And on the last one, Chair, is slide number 46. Here, you talk about the fruitless expenditure. And some staff have been suspended. How many staff have been suspended? And what was the cause of the suspension? And what is the time frame? When are they going to be fired if they need to be fired? And when are they going to become reinstalled if that is a solution? We want to find out about this fruitless expenditure. The cause of that fruitless expenditure. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Tony. Honorable Stanis will be followed by Honorable November. No, not Honorable November. Honorable Nwani, Honorable November, Mama Majan.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and thank you to CIDB for the presentation. It was very thorough. I just want to return to the issue about compliance, because I think it's a very, very big issue. I'm from KwaZulu-Natal, and I'm very well aware of the interventions that you made at a municipal level in eThekwini around the development in Umlazi. And I think it's going to be a real challenge for the CIDB going forward in terms of getting compliance from municipalities. We certainly know in that instance there was interesting comments from the leadership and the city manager about CIDB and their role and what they regarded as an interference in municipal affairs. So I think there's going to have to be a seismic shift in how the CIDB wields authority you know, particularly with municipalities and as you say, our own family of government going forward in order to take seriously. And I just wanted to perhaps unpack what the intervention process is with municipalities and other government institutions that don't comply with CIDB regulations going forward. And then just on page 127 of your annual report, I know it's not huge amounts of money, but a rather sharp increase in bad debts written off. And I just wanted to establish if this is a trend, or was there a particular reason that the figure jumped so high between 2010 and 2011? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Honourable
Chairperson. Mine is on... The first one is the concern. Actually, it's more of an addition to what you raised about the contractors and at level one and two. And most of those contractors, mainly being black contractors, and really they stay there for years on end without any sign of them moving to the further upper levels. And the concern also about the level 7, 8, and 9 being mostly 90% white or 95% white. So it really, they were actually the contractors were saying, it looks like we as black contractors are not being racist. We're meant to stay at level 1, 2, and 3. So what could be the problem? And then how do you think you're going to rectify that? Not that anything that is overboard that really means to assist those people. Because we've got, to add to that is the fact that we've got other entities doing the same job. Why can't you work together? Like, for instance, IDT is doing almost the same job. Why can't they check with you which in the area they are building or building a school or whatever, which contractors are at that level, at level, and the ones that you would like to push up. And there is also Agrima that has got that gives us the giving certificates to those contractors that to do the right job. Okay, and the one other concern that was raised is the downgrading of how does it happen, why does it happen, downgrading of contractors. Also, the point about the quarterly reports. I would like to make a request that you don't only send the quarterly reports to National Department of Public Works. We would like to have those quarterly reports so that you can make a follow up and assist where possible. Lastly, the launching of these construction contact centers. We really appreciate the fact that has been done, because we had a very big concern that most of the contractors, they move from the Eastern Cape, from Mpumalanga to Pretoria. Now that you have got these regional centers, it's really appreciated. But I think also what you need to do is to check with these regional centers whether they go to the contractors, because it's only when we are there as the portfolio committee making oversight in the province that they are seen to be there, and only then that they try to answer to the questions. But if they have regular meetings with the contractors in the area, that could assist also the national CIDB. so that when you go there, already you have got the issues. You know what is at stake here, and then not for you to go there and find out for the first time some of the issues. But I think you need to assist them to work very closely with the contractors. They must go. They must make regular meetings with the contractors, because it's as I'm saying, that it's only when we're there that you see that they are talking for the first time. Some of they don't understand some of the issues. They don't understand some of the processes that have taken place in the same area, whereas there is the regional contractor set. I think for now, I'll make a follow-up later. Thanks. I have another.
Thank you, Chairperson. And also thank you to CIDB for a thorough report. And most of the questions have been asked. Is that one on slide 4, you talk about the stakeholder management, and that there are only two provinces that are left. Which provinces are they? The second one is on page 23. It has also been raised by Honorable Sithole under the fruitless and wasteless expenditure. Wanted to know whether the staff members are still under suspension and with salary, and as Honorable Sithole has also asked, the period of suspension, because the longer it takes, the more money goes if they are suspended with payment or with salary. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Marota. Thanks, Honorable Chair. Thanks to CIDP with the, I think this is what our chairperson always say, we need honesty when we get reports and deliberations. I think my colleague has checked on the issue of the provinces, because the report indicates that sometimes there are challenges around the issue of gathering information from the provinces. And I think the chairperson of CIDP is saying that they are prepared, that if any stakeholders are having challenges, they come direct to them so that they try and solve those particular problems. I want to check what mechanism the CIDP will be coming up with to try and get the information and monitor the provinces around the issue of information, so that they can strengthen their reporting mechanism also to have the factual information, if one can understand that one. Also, you raised the issue of the request that has been put forward to Department of Public Works around the issue of putting moratorium on the degrading, because this is a challenge that we really encountered when we're in the Eastern Cape, as the chair has alluded to say that the contractors are having the worries around the issue of degrading, that they will never grow. If you don't get a job, you are being degraded, as if it's your fault that you don't get a job. Maybe on that particular issue that we have put forward as a request, I don't know, when did you put it? Have you get a response to say that the department is accepting that moratorium around the issue of degrading, because this is what is killing the young contractors to take part in the process of construction. Maybe if we can get that clarity. And also on the issue irregular expenditure, one appreciates that you said also the official concern actions were taken against them. But what one wants to establish around the issue of tightening those control measures to say that in future they don't undermine, you know, the policies of the organization, to say what is it. Do you have a risk management policy also to identify issues that is really going to impact negatively?
organization. Maybe that is our question, but we appreciate the report, and also we appreciate that after you have got this emphasis from the Auditor General, you have come up with a plan. These are the plans as a committee on our oversight. We are going to really follow up, and also, as my whip was saying, that all the quarterly reports you send, we'll appreciate also if we get as early as we can, so that if any intervention we want to do, we can do it. Thanks.
Yo, Maraba, Mama, my apologies. Should have
been in essence. Okay, over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm sure you're having a problem with the surname. I'm Madlala. She's Mahlopa. Okay, Chairperson, my first concern is on the highlights about the on page 3 about the regulations, which are mandatory for all public sector infrastructure clients. Now, the presenter is saying that it's very poor levels of compliance with the CIT regulations have been noted. Now, if maybe he can expand, what mechanism are they taking, what steps are they taking to overcome such a problem of not complying to the regulations? My other question is on the staff's compliments on page 91 of the report itself. I see here there's a semi-skilled staff of 71. Semi-skilled 71. Why is it the number is so big, and what is their purpose? Also, the unskilled staff of 5. What is their duty? Why are they there if they are so unskilled? Also, I don't see any person with disability in the staff complement itself. If we can get a clarity, why is there no any person with disabilities? Thanks, Chairperson.
Mama, Baba Kayla.
Next level. I want to ask you one. I don't want to check the clothes petting or flashing away here. Okay, Chairperson. First of all, CIDP, when it was formed, formed to level the playing field of the emerging sector. Fortunately, I was involved in the formation of CIDP. I was the deputy president of NAVCO Construction. All the way it got hijacked by the established sector. And I'm happy that the new board is here. Chairperson is starting on a good note because I see they're trying to level the playing field. However, the chairperson has made an understatement. The 26th of July, when we were in Mthatha, those people nearly locked us up there. They told us it's just because you're from national. If it was these from the province, we were going to deal with them. And this is the last time that we are coming here. They told us. They made it very clear. And they are frustrated. And they can be frustrated. Because your policies need to be reviewed. Your policies are messed up. They need to be reviewed. They don't cater for the emerging sector at all. You have to understand emerging sector. In fact, you said you dealt with associations. The problem, you deal with associations at the provincial level. Does not give you the answer. You know, if you sit with Joburg Clemens, does not give you the answer. So you need then, in northern cases, a problem. In all the provinces, there are problems. Now, if you sit with a association that are in Joburg, you are not going to deal with this problem. You need to sit with association at all provinces. Then you know where the problem is. For instance, some of your requirements that we need to look at, you look at financial requirements. How stable are they financially? How do you expect a black contractor to be stable financially? You know, Jefferson, in 1948, when the National Party took over, the Afrikaners were very poor. But the government made means that they upgraded them. That's why you have the Sanlam and the Rembrandts today. And that is what we want to achieve. And we have to, for instance, your black contractors, they use development houses. As Mama Ngungwana says, you go to IDT. IDT has been able to upgrade its contractors better than any other body because they designed a contract document that is going to allow them not to have a surety. But the surety is deducted from their progress payment. And it has developed them. They get assistance from suppliers, and so, but they build a major project. For instance, in a circular sent to the president, which you have a copy of, I think you do have a copy. There is a complaint about you. Yes, a copy. I got a copy of that. If you don't have a copy, there's a complaint about CIDB. They did intervention in the manner they are treated. Some of them have done major contracts. Major. Even the provincial government offices, that was built by black contractors. Now, with your previous board, the established sector was represented there, not the black contractors. In so much that the established sector made sure that that board does not move, that these black contractors remain subcontractors. If you are a subcontractor, you are nothing. Mm-hmm. Let us be very clear. So, then you also have got, you need technical skills. For instance, a contractor does not work for 1 year. How do you expect him to keep on having a quantity surveyor? He does not work for 1 year. Some of them don't even get paid for a year, for that matter. There are some that don't get paid from provincial governments for a year. Now, how do you expect him to have sound financial statement, to have a technical guy that is not... But what you should do, give you a suggestion as well, is that you should liaise with Department of Higher Education so that you... There's a lot of these youngsters that are running around with certificates of quality surveys. You go in the village, they are full, they don't have any work. Collect those youngsters and have a retired engineer and a quality surveyor to monitor them, and you deploy them, and the contractor then in turn pays them. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's simple, it's very simple. When we were sitting in a country that got no artisans, we don't have artisans. CIDP was supposed to have a policy, how do we have artisans? That is what we proposed when it was formed. And it's simple as that. Each major contract is done by the government. You, in line with the construction sector, you deploy the youth there so that they get skills. You know, there's quite a lot that needs to be done, but you need to review your system. Check all those contractors. What projects have they done? Don't go 3 years back, because from the instant when you started CITP, you went 2 years back, and it was a mess up. Let's go a bit further from 1994. What happened? Go to IDT, and you'll find that the best contractors are sitting there. The only entity that's helping the chairperson is IDT. That is the truth of the matter. So, those are few of the... Then the downgrading. I just don't understand that. Although I see that you got some intervention. First of all, construction is not like a shop. A shop is open every day. You get money. Construction, some of them don't get work for 3 years. Now, if you charge them a high fee, they then are unable to pay when they don't have work. So you have to have a system that when they don't have work, have a fee that is at least, payable. Jefferson. I mean, if you don't work for a year, definitely you're going to use all the money that you've accumulated in the last year. So how are you then going to pay your fees? Those are some of the problems that we have. You know, in the daily dispatch of the 3rd of October, I must check, the MSC for local government in the province echoes the same problem. The problem is CIDP. But as I say, Chairperson, luckily, in the other interventions that, but they need to talk to the industry at provincial level. That's where the problem is. Not at head office or collecting some few people, they go and sit to those guys at provincial level. Then, in your slides, I just want, in your annual report, I just want to clarify. Let's go to page 54. Let's go to page 54 there. The infrastructure improvement program, IDP toolkit. Can you explain that? Is that the same toolkit that is being used by DBSA to batch projects? If you can explain that, please. Well, if it's the same toolkit, then I foresee you having lots of problems there. Then page 64. On top of the CIDP skills, can you explain to us on what skills the skills identified, defense and skills by public sector officials? Can you explain to us? Page 64, the top part. I just want you to explain that. Then we go to page 81. I think some of my colleagues have picked up some of this as well. Oh, page 81. You say 48% of 48% of payments contracts were made over 30 days or longer. There's an improvement compared to 2008. Is that with government or with national government or provincial government? Because if it's with the provincial government, I'll argue with you this. That is not true. Some of our paid are over 90 days, some 120 days. So if you can explain on 81 there. Then we go to page 2, the ownership, change of order of black ownership. Bullet number 3, page 82. Say the ownership has decreased in bullet number 3. What is the reason for the decrease? Can you just explain up there? Then we go to page 87. I think really we touch on 87. Page 87, the top bullet, the first one. The learnership with FET colleges, page 87, top, right at top there, industry ESDA, yes. Can you explain to us that one there? And the last one, 06. Your procurement to goods of a value 10,500 were not procured without, were procured without inviting at least three written price quotations. Why did that happen? Can you just, 106.17, That's what I'm saying. And then I just want to go to your slide here. Page 2 on the slide. Page 2 is what I was talking about, really. The registration, the turnover. But what I really would like to know, is it still open for you to involve the provincial stakeholders? Because they are very important. Or else you'll always have the same problem. Page 2, right at the bottom there. Mm-hmm. The last slide here. Page 3.
page 3, the bottom slide, right on top, the CIDB regulations are mandatory for all public sector service clients. However, very poor level of compliance with CIDB regulations has been noted. Now, if you say they are very poor, are they poor with the government or private sector? That's what I would understand. Because we pick up in our annual report that these regulations, even with government, some people get tenders without being graded by, I picked it up when I read the annual report of Department of Public Works. So I just want clarity on that. Then page 4, or oh, the fruitless extension of value at the end of the alternative. Okay, that's a if you can give me, those are the ones, Chairperson, thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Member. CIDB, can you please respond?
Thank you so much, Chair. I now know why you said you must have our coffee. I am going to record these as, read these as I've recorded them. Some of them will be dealt by myself, which those that are at a political level of the CIDP and the ones that are within functionaries within the CIDP, the CEO will delegate the people. The first one was fraud and fronting. What is the action against perpetrators? Downgrading of contractors, and downgrading of contractors. Training and development, in which province is this thing happening, which youth is involved, the extent of development. The ESDAs and the ESDAs and the ESDAs. Which youth, again, has been supported by the ESDAs and much more detail on the ESDAs. The corrective action plan on slide 22, which is on page 11. I think it's the that is on fruitless expenditure. And what prevention thereof of the fruitless expenditure? And what is the corrective action? Have we suspended some staff? Are they on full pay? And all of that, that is what is needed there. And compliance, what intervention processes are in place in terms of non-compliance by client bodies that we have found out of the blitz that was presented by the CEO, the blitz that has been conducted. The bad debts have been written off, although it was seen as a non-significant amount, but still what was happening, I think it was wrong. Level 1 and 2 contractors, the development program for this, concerns about level 7 and 9, they are prescribed for whites only. Working together as DPW entities, can they work together, get some learning from IDT and all these other guys, that agreement South Africa and all of that. Quarterly reports should be sent directly to yourself as well, not to the department only. The launching of triple C's, we should just check if they are functioning properly and are they really getting to the grassroots, are they conducting the contractors locally. The stakeholder forum, which two provinces are out of that? There are two provinces that are out of that. And getting information from provinces of concern to contractors, that would be responded to on that stakeholder forum. The CIDB regulations, the non-compliance, this is are coming up again. What steps have been taken? That is, I mentioned it earlier on. Why are there 71 semi-skilled people at the CIDB? And the 5 that is unskilled, what is it kept for? Why is there that like that? Why is there no person that has got disabled people? Why are we not having disabled employees? Interaction with basic contractors, like in the case of the Eastern Cape, And unfortunately, some people nearly got locked up. I'm sorry about that. The requirements for grading of contractors, very worrisome, the financials, difficult to put together the projects, not of their cause, because they did not get the projects, but they still get them graded. Also, that would touch on the fees that are being charged to the contractors. They don't get money. How are they going to keep on their activity within the CIDB? Page 64, expansion on skills program. Payment improvements that have been mentioned in our report, are they provincial or are they national? Who has improved on payments? Page 82, bullet number 3, the reasons for the decrease. Page 87, again, it's about ESTA. Page 106.17, why did that happen? And the last one was non-compliance by the client. Again, I think it's featuring itself again. I don't know if there is any other feel. I'll just go through some of them. I'll start with the downgrading of the contractors. I never thought that, in fact, maybe I must take it one step backwards. There's been general complaints about the CIDB managed when I put my other cap, also assuming the leadership in black business. And therefore, we convened a meeting, a summit on the 6th of September, which was addressed by the president. And one of the first complaints on that was the CIDB regulations. That's what the summit complained about. It's not anything new. Before the election of this current government, I think it was in 2008, we formed a structure called Confederation of Black Business Organizations, and it was launched in Central Convention Center. One of the complaints was about the CIDB again. So we are familiar with the concerns that are here. We would like the new board that has been appointed to the CIDB to be given an opportunity to be able to prove itself to be responsive to the concerns that are being experienced. Now, let me start talking about the downgrading of contractors. Downgrading of contractors is part of the grading of contractors. It is not the concern that was raised on the summit that I mentioned was of grading of contractors, not about just downgrading. Downgrading is one of the elements, is part of the problem. It is not the main problem. Maybe the main problem is looking at the overall grading system. Now, if we could say, for instance, In an ideal world, there is nothing called a downgrading of contractors. Very controversially, because if you had asked me last year, I was an activist who was complaining about the CIDB. I was complaining about the downgrading of contractors. What happens, the CIDB grades the contractors according to their capacity at the time of application. That those elements that the CIDB looks at include the financials, the capability of the projects, the machinery, everything that you are having that shows that you can be able to do a project, say, of 3 million rand. If for whatever reason you cannot be able, you come, say, after 3 years and you do not get projects, you got your TLB reports, there some people resigned, they walked away. Now you're kind of a one-man show with three other people or whatever it is. But your capacity has been affected adversely and now you've got a problem. It means if the CIDB has got to evaluate you at that time, you are not capable to do a 3 million rand project. It is unlike writing examinations where, for instance, individual professionals
who are educated to be doing that and get certificates. Or maybe somebody who has done standard one, he cannot be asked to do standard one next year because he cannot be downgraded to do grade zero or something like that because it's past standard one. But this one is based on capacity that you have at that time. It goes to the heart of grading of contractors at all. Would then be it normal for contractors to be graded at all? That would be the query that the people seem to be having. So the contractors get a lower grade because of their capacity at the time of application. They are not being downgraded. What people could be concerned about is the methodology of evaluating contractors on the overall. If you are going to, for instance, I heard somebody talking about the financials. Are they important or not important in grading of contractors? What is it that needs to be considered for a contractor to be a grade 5, to be a grade 2, to be a grade 7? That would be much more important. Therefore, if downgrading can be suspended, if there can be a target on downgrading, we'd actually be saying, let us not grade the contractors. Because we are grading them, we are reflecting the capability of those contractors. It is not because they are liked or not liked. It's because of their capability at that time. Can they do a project or can they do that project? So I felt I should labor on this element of grading of contractors. That the much more better thing to do is to look at the evaluation criteria of contractors. And also that we would not have to go with emotions to it. We'd have to look at the effects that that evaluation would have on the industry. That is about downgrading. So having said all of that, after the summit, a delegation from black business, because the black business is more affected by the downgrading, although it's not exclusive only to black business, but they are more affected. I convened a meeting that I chaired to sit down with the affected representatives of black business organizations. Now, when you look at the black business organizations in the industry, we look at those organizations that are represented in the construction charter. Because if we could say it's all organizations, there will be Kailicha contractors, there will be Soweto contractors, Disho contractors, and so on. And it would become difficult to put them on the same status as, say, NAFCO contractors, or NAFCAT, or NAFP, or any contractor that is national would be different to the one that is regional. We sat down with all those organizations that appear on the construction charter. I sat down with them. They are represented under a structure called Black Business Council in Built Environment. And the issue of downgrading was discussed. Their input was that they would like us to have, because I explained like I'm explaining to yourself, their input was that they would like this moratorium to be for about 2 years or so, whilst the new methodology of evaluating contractors is being considered. Let us understand that if we can stop grading the contractors, we'll kill the industry completely. We must look back at why the CIDB was formed in the first place. It was to have specific class of people tendering for contracts. I'm not going to go to most of these, but I'm going to go to the second one that also we discussed, which was level 1 and level 2 contractors. Actually, on level 1, there is a general feeling also from the contractors, the contractors themselves, that, by the way, I'm talking as a black contractor as well, besides my CIDB cap. I own a construction company.
There is a feeling that for grade one, there are no barriers of entry. Anyone around this table can go to the CIDB, pay the necessary fee, and become a grade one today, now. So it is difficult to have even a plan of assisting contractors on grade one. There have been serious discussions, and which we have sent to the management of the CIDB to discuss amongst themselves what impact would it have if we do not have a grade one. People don't need to register for grade one if we could have that kind of a situation. What kind? Because also we don't want to just say stop. Within these walls, please don't quote me anywhere else, but within these walls, we would see this as robbery if you are asking for money from grade one, who you have got no plan to assist, no nothing to do with them. They simply are paying their money, that is all. So grade one, it's people, some of them are just caterers. We heard that their relative has made it in construction. They go past the IDP, they pay whatever the amount is. I don't know how much the person that pays for grade one, they pay that amount of money. They try and they find out, no, it's difficult, they walk away. They are not even in the industry at all. And that becomes, that is why the CIDB cannot be able to plan for the grade ones. Now, if somebody has got that grade, at least has started, then what would that mean? Is that ideally? The person must have performed something in the industry before they can come in. Can't just have an industry where anybody can come in and be part of the CIDB. Now, out of about 130,000 or so of the contractors of the CIDB, about 90,000 of those are grade ones. Now, when we are talking about disadvantaged black contractors, we put all those together, which is an unfair exercise. And that is a very, very serious problem for us. So there is that consideration of doing away with grade ones. But I'm not saying we are doing away now. But I'm just saying the management has been tasked to deal with that. There is a non-compliance by the client bodies. We got a report, a very, very serious report. I saw it as a very, very serious report that we got. I think Inba is going to be able to expand on that. The report shows non-compliance by the client bodies altogether. Now, if I take you one step backwards, black contractors are seen as delinquents that are very irresponsible, that get a contract, not finish it, go and buy a 4x4, and that is the kind of an image of a black contractor that is seen. Unfortunately, even from the government point of view, this is the situation. But now you find that the same government officials in municipalities, in all those procurement areas, they take unqualified people, their relatives, friends, and other people. They take them, they give them these contracts, they cannot finish those contracts, those people, and it's not blamed on those people's relatives, but on black contractors. So that creates that kind of an atmosphere, which is very, very wild, and I would like this committee to really look at that. I've asked Inba to go further to look at this thing so that this report can be structured much more properly, and I would like it to be submitted to yourself in due time so that you can actually be familiar with this. This takes us to a second point to that part, that what actually needs to happen is that CIDB needs more teeth in dealing with this. If there is non-compliance by client bodies, we need to have the CIDB being active. What do I mean by that? I'll give you a personal experience because I'm coming from the industry. Last year, there was one of the government agencies that awarded a contract. The contract was about, they awarded a contract at 112 million rand. We had tendered for that, and that was about 80 million rand that I submitted, and I've got experience on that, all the track record and everything. There was no risk that could be calculated on the credibility of our company. But it was awarded to the company that had 112 million rand. What then I did was to ask for tender adjudication reports from the government agency.
They simply refused.
They gave me a lot of running around, and the ultimate end, I went to the CIDB and I said, CIDB, these are regulations that are implemented in here. Why can't you, CIDB, write a letter to the client? And they told me at CIDB that no, they cannot be able to do this kind of thing. They have got no right to do that. Now, the CIDB cannot set the regulations and not be able to see how they are implemented. There has got to be punitive measures that the CIDB implements on client bodies that are not behaving accordingly. This is going to go to the, right to the heart of corruption that we are having. It will go right up to the heart of project delivery. The delivery now, if we look at, you know, whether we look at the new growth path or we look at anything which deals sometimes with alternative means of delivery, procurement, this will go to the heart of a matter like that. There is nothing that stops from the, these client bodies to either put it on a website or send it to the CIDB, their tender adjudication report for each and every tender adjudication. So that at the click of a button, if one person feels they have not got the tender in an unfair manner, somebody, somewhere in the CIDB or someone can click a button and say, this is how you lost. That helps the person as well that has lost to see how they can improve to be better people and win the tender. That goes straight to the heart of corruption. I'm not going to talk about the semi-skilled. I'll leave that to the CEO and the unskilled. I'll talk about the disabled people. We have asked, I think there must be some kind of a process. We've asked as well, immediately, when I saw that, that was the first thing that we asked, that we should have disabled people within the CIDB that are employed. The intervention of CIDB, when we are interacting with the client, should be able to go further, even on the packaging of contracts by the client bodies. You are now telling me about the Eastern Cape, which are, when I said to the guys at the Eastern Cape, their blood was quite warm as well. But I had to calm them down because that I could live like an amphibian. So I explained to them this kind of a situation. The problem there, again, the CIDB should be able to intervene in cases of packaging of projects. I'll give you a classic example. In the Eastern Cape, or maybe I must just take it one step backward, during the preparation for the 2010 World Cup, black companies never participated effectively on the building of the stadiums, on the construction of the roads, and on the building of the airports. These all were in the hands of our government. It is our government that is supposed to empower us, but it never empowered us. This is because simply those projects were packaged badly. If they were packaged properly, they ought to have catered for development of black contractors. Now, this is what has happened. The Eastern Cape has been given just over ₹8 billion to build schools. What has the Eastern Cape done? It has packaged all of those in one. So as that, the local contractors, they cannot be able to tender on an ₹8 billion kind of a project. The big boys are going to be getting that. Let me give you another example. Around Gauteng, there is acid water that has been talked about in the mines and all over there. That project has been given to TCTA, Trans-Caledon Tunnel Authority. That company has picked up the top 20 companies. Certainly, how many big companies are in the top 20 companies? They, when I discussed with them, I asked them passionately, why are you excluding black companies into this? They said, no, black companies must come as subcontractors. You know what that means?
it means that these guys, the big guys, are going to take all their bad boys and other people and give them, what's them, develop some kind of a quasi-developmental initiative. And it will never go to the real contractors. Now, we had asked, personally, I had gone to the TCTA before I got to the CIDB, we had asked them that they must go through an accreditation process for contractors. You get to know who the real contractors are. They submit their profiles, they submit their, all their necessary information. When they have submitted that, you get that list and you say that, you, Mr. Big Contractor, when you win this thing, talk to one of those people as a JV and not a subcontractor, a JV partner, who is going to sit in the boardroom and discuss on the same level. That has not happened. So, if the CIDB also can get that kind of this, it will be able to deal with the developmental aspect of the mandate. Why are we not working with IDT? We have formed in the past, I think, two months under my chairmanship. We have formed these entities that are within public works. Your Agreement South Africa, your IDT, your CBE, and the CIDB, all those we have now convened. We convened a meeting which I chair every second month. That meeting seeks to look at the commonalities between the entities so that we can be more effective. What we have seen in the past is that everybody tells you that they are running developmental programs, contractor development, but you don't see anybody that has been developed through those programs, and that becomes a worry. Now we wanted to get real people that have been participating in the industry to be party to that. They get normal accreditation. That is why I would be concerned if we move away from evaluating the contractors and giving them the appropriate grades. If we want to talk about how we support them to sustain those grades, it's a separate issue altogether, so that the guy cannot lose the grade. But let us not deviate from the standards terribly. It will be to the detriment of the industry. The stakeholders forum, I think I have mentioned it. What we want to do there is we don't want to go and, firstly, what we want to do is to get associations that are in the industry to be the stakeholders, the associations and the client bodies. All those, either it should be the president of an association or it should be somebody in the very senior level in that association. All of them, black and white, those associations must be part of the stakeholder forum. They should make submissions. Initially, I said we wanted to have some on the website of the CIDB before we say talk to the chairman, but we realized that I'll get all sorts of problems because I'm running my own company. I cannot do that. But would like to attend to that part. Would like to get all those stakeholders to present all their problems as they are. We don't want, we will not respond, we will allow them to throw anything at us. And then we say, after 6 months, we promise those people, after 6 months, we'll come back to you and tell you what is it that you've done with your problems, or what is it that we are going to be doing. Each and every person will be getting off those organizations. It will be signed, the letter will be signed by myself. It will be requesting each and every one of those organizations to state very clearly what the problems are, how they feel we should solve them. If that is within the law and it's doable, we would be able to do it. I am happy at this point. I think I might have to give you over to the CEO. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
I think in terms of responding to the rest of the questions, we'll just go down the list. I think each of us here knows specifically which questions relate to his or her area of competence. So we shall start with Mr. Gerard Naidu.
Thanks, Chair. Honorable members, I think the grade one issue has been adequately captured by our board chairperson, but it's a direct issue which I face on a regular basis because my portfolio is growth and contractor development. And in my portfolio, one part of it is enterprise development, contractor development. The other is the management of these decentralized offices that we have in the provinces, which we branded as construction contact centers, the triple C's. So I, on a regular basis, go out personally, and I've got managers and a structure in each province to be able to interact with the contractors. And it's rightly said that 80 to 90% of our stakeholders as contractors are grade one. So I know the chair has mentioned a formal process of going forward in terms of stakeholder interactions and workshops, but from our program and as the admin, we couldn't just sit back and hear of parliamentarians going into provinces and being accosted and being threatened, etc. So immediately such reports reached our ears, we established a program of outreach to the contractors through the CCCs, the management and head office as well, going out, starting off with the Eastern Cape, Amtata specifically, and then going to East London as well as Port Elizabeth, meeting with associations that were invited to your parliamentary portfolio interaction, and receiving their letter in advance that they had written both to the Eastern Cape and to yourself, where there were some nasty comments made about CIDB specifically. And getting into a room with them, and yes, it was vicious initially, but being in a position to see which areas we can find some common ground on and which areas we beg to differ on. And I think coming out of those interactions and meetings, we've been able to, over the past month, now travel to 8 of the 9 provinces. Limpopo is happening on the 21st of October. But in every province, we've met with, under the banner of the charter, the BBCBE, if they have representativity. But not just them. We've gone to the NAFCON and NAFCOC structures. We've gone to SAWIC and SAWIN. We've gone to KUTAZA. We've gone to NAFPI, NAFCAT, ABBA, Black associations, and established associations, to be able to hear what the issues are and start documenting these. Because I wouldn't like when our chairperson and board and others go in a month or 2 weeks or whenever, and it seems like we're not in touch with these issues. So we've had an interaction, and a process has now been established where we've even signed agreements with these associations, who are the leadership of those associations in the provinces, who are willing to put down on paper to say as their first recourse, they would want to interact with CIDB, raise the issues, and see how we can come up with possible solutions. And if that fails, yes, they'll bring it to the ear of the board, parliamentarians, the minister, and elevate it continuously. So those processes of interactions are underway. They've also recognized that they can't go out on broad statements and calls for closure of the CIDB, because, in effect, that wouldn't give them the statistical basis on which to assess whether someone is a grade 1 or a grade 9, because that tool now starts being used as a risk management tool for the clients, but for emerging contractors and for everyone else to be able to pitch where it is they are. If a development program is being established, or if IDT is running programs, to be able to pitch at certain levels where gaps might exist. The chair has also spoken about joint forums, which forms part of my portfolio. My enterprise development manager, German Paschlella, is passionate about traveling to these stakeholders, interacting with them and meeting with them, and also interacting at the head office level with the likes of CVVE, IDT, and others. Now, the IDT, no, we can't take away any accolades from them in terms of being able to spend huge budgets. So if they've got 2 billion rand to spend on projects, then they become a core client in delivery. And one of the success factors for contractors is you have to have the work in place. But the IDT's policy of contract development also aligns directly with the CIDB's framework, which is in partnership with Public Works on National Contractor Development Program, which is the NCDP. So IDT is fully compliant, works with us continuously, and together with the IDT, we ensure that those development programs align to our guidelines and all the best practices in contractor development. The question on the two provinces that weren't part of the stakeholder management process, I think it's been spoken of that Nationally, we are mandated in terms of our legislation in October every year to hold one stakeholder forum. What we've decided previously is let's do it at a provincial level, because we can't just let something reach the ear of the minister at a national level from people sitting in Gauteng normally, if we haven't got a feel from on the ground what's happening. So these provincial stakeholder workshops were conducted in the past, and as has been mentioned, in seven of the provinces. Purely for operational reasons, we enter into partnership with the provincial works departments in terms of rolling out these workshops, and we ask for the MECs and the HODs to champion such interactions, because we wouldn't like the CIDB to go into a province and not have right on our side our key partner and lead partner being the provincial works departments. It is just in the two provinces where logistics didn't allow for it to happen within the financial year, and we asked to host that, having interactive workshops on a one-on-one or bilateral basis or contested development forums, which are all platforms for which we interact with the stakeholders. But the two provinces, to name them, that it didn't happen in the 2010-11 year are the Northwest and Limpopo. Sorry, correction on that. It's not Northwest and Limpopo, it's Free State and Limpopo. Free State and Limpopo. The capturing of all of these issues, after we do these provincial stakeholder and the national stakeholder workshop, we do take minutes and we do have an action table and we have timelines within which we must report back to the stakeholders who have raised those issues from a provincial level and at the national level. So that is the factual capturing of all of these issues and a means and mechanism to feedback when formally on our annual process, but informally through all these interactions that happen on a quarterly basis, contractor development forum meetings, stakeholder interactions, the bilaterals, all of this, the CCC managers have part of their performance reporting process on a quarterly basis to interact with these stakeholders and to give feedback and to attain further input on issues. So that's the factual capturing of issues with stakeholders and a feedback mechanism as well. I think most of the issues the Chair has spoken around, but just to go to the one issue of professionals and honourable member, we take the comments from such sessions with yourself constructively, and then we go back and we do our homework in terms of trying to incorporate these into our process. And so from our interactions with yourselves and contractors previously, there was a whole lot of calls for example, don't give us the need to have a professional on our books at the point of registration. And so when we compile revised registration criteria, which you've seen, one of those criteria are specifically to deal with that issue of professionals. Because from my portfolio, I need to see, let's remove all the stumbling blocks for emerging contractor development. Let's make it as easy as possible for a contractor who's been registered, who has some level of competency and who's a real contractor and not one of those hopefuls or job seekers. But if they meet the criteria, let's make it easy enough for them to be sustainable and to take that next step up. And through the processes we have seen, grade ones, there are some potential in them. So we get about 700 upgrades. And so we can't just in totality ignore them. And that's why the Chair said the management and executive of CIDB are now in the process of saying, how can we differentiate in the grade ones, maybe some with track record or recognition of prior learning. Those are all of the issues we'll have to consider and then come out with a recommendation to the board, interact with stakeholders, Department of Public Works Policy, and come out with further registration refinements, because all of these registration refinements in the end contribute to the development of the industry and development of contractors. And so that issue on the professionals, we take to heed your recommendation, but we have made a recommendation that you've heard is now been submitted to Public Works to run through the internal processes to refine our criteria, and one of those recommendations has been on the issue of professionals not to be registered at the point of submission of the application, but at a later point of contract award by the client. My colleague who is not here today, Dr. Rodney Murford, champions within the CIDB the Construction Industry Performance Unit, which starts to look at specific issues around artisan development, education and training of contractors, the setup of the Employment Skills Development Agency, incorporation of youth into these development agencies, and one of the slides that we didn't get a chance to present talks about a certain number, I think it was 24, learners who were taken and given at least an NQF of level 4 under the mentorship and guidance of some professionals and being able to put them into mainstream and be able to mentor and guide them. And CIDB has piloted this because there are a number of other organizations as well. The duplication and overlap with regard to construction CETA requirements and other organizations, even the IDTs and CBEs that are also involved in skills, public works, as well as specific skills strategy, we have to align to all of these, and we can have some catalytic or initiatives where we take on a certain pilot number and then put it out to industry to run with a program such as the ESDERS. Chair, I think that's covered most of my issues. I'll come back to any issue which might be left over at the end.
Thank you. Over to you, ma'am.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members, our Chairperson, the acting CEO. I would like to socialize the issue regarding reason for downgrade. The total number of downgraded companies as to date raised by Honorable Sitala. Well, there are a variety of factors that lead to downgrade, as the Chairperson has alluded to. However, and strongly so, downgrade becomes a matter of last resort as and when it happens. And this is how we go about it. Over a period of 3 years, a contractor comes to the CIDB for a reapplication, and we evaluate that application as new for the purposes of managing the risk that whomever contracts with that contractor, being it a government department, is exposed to. In many instances, black and white contractors at times give us incomplete track records or incomplete projects that they would have been paid for to a certain degree and not paid for in full, thus constituting a contractual breach between the client, being a government department, and the contractor. Those issues are escalated in a multi-pronged manner within the CIDB through our compliance, legal compliance department, and investigations, and through investigations as well that we take on a one-on-one with the responsible professionals who they've been appointed. The contractor will give us a different story, saying that, well, I have completed the project, but he will be giving us 4 or 3 interim payment certificates. And the professional who would have been managing the contract will give us a completely different story. At times, by sheer luck, we happen to know about these things and see them at face value. Partly, that is one of the reasons. Going forward, the issue regarding professionals, being it professional engineers, professional architects, that we had requested as per the regulations that are not yet amended, we found out through our engagements at the national stakeholder forums and provincial stakeholder forums that these things are problematic. And how are they even problematic? It's purely legacy issues. We said that there is a supply side of professionals, which you know, by default happens to be the majority of professional engineers and professional architects happen to be coming from a different color scheme in opposition to blacks. How do we then create that bridge between a black contractor one and the white engineer to work together? How much does it actually cost a black contractor to have that type of a skill within his books for the execution of a contract, or even extending to the registration of a construction company within the CIDB? Our observations and investigations revealed that that was actually not right. Hence, we annotated it as part of the amendments that we would like to be entertained and removed ultimately. We looked into the issue of the financial side of things, and our approach was very simple. Government, being the major procurer of goods and services in this country, cannot afford to pay contractors upfront. For it actually breeds this statement that, you know, a contract that's unknown by 4x4 or something like. So it does happen that United Times, we have to actually look into that measure to say that it is imperative that when you start a contract, at least there's a little bit of seed capital that you put into the project to start. Safe to say that the appointment letter that you would have received from any user client will serve as a collateral to any of the funding agencies within the public. We have taken it a step further, and we're actually saying that without having to drop the standards, we are revisiting the capital requirements to say that, one, we are cognizant of the fact that on the basis of the socio-economic history that this country has, predominantly black people don't have money to start their projects at times. So where does it put us? It puts us to be in one room with contractors, whether from the Northwest, from the Northern Cape, through MEC David Roy, I remember quite well, we actually entertained that matter with him to say that these are the challenges that we have. Can we have an audience that will be constructive, leading us to something that we can all work towards? And that's how we arrived at the reduction in the available capital values. And the turnovers that contractors need to master, those turnovers, among other things, being the issue relating to the incomplete projects, which is a big problem, because government is spending money, but we are not getting a return on the investment from a service delivery point of view. I think honorable members are familiar with issues where police stations have been built up to 60%. Should it be then that the CIDB blindly walks into this thing and awards the contractor who has been in that particular situation a grade to perpetuate this type of history? We said that we need to have an extensive investigation around this type of thing. And through the new groom that has come on the new board, not taking anything from the previous board, our motto has been that there is a three-way approach where a CCC manager comes in, and somebody from the registration department where I am located comes in, and we actually sit on a one-on-one and have an interview with whoever the contractor is hard done or is affected by this type of thing. Most of the time, I would say 99.9%, we've achieved positive results because contractors will have understood the nature of our requirements, and they go out to go do good in as far as that is concerned. And some have become very honest with us and said that, you know, the CADB is actually friendly to what we want to do, except on this particular area that they will always highlight. Now, the total number of downgraded contracts is at the 10th of October 2011, out of a total number of about 115,000, more or less, is 2.73% or 2,866 downgraded contractors, downgraded on a variety of grades, either from a 9 to a 8, and that's predominantly large white-owned companies. As a result of this recession, some of them are not able to actually maintain those particular grades. Some of them are at 7, going down to 8, and a variety of reasons are the inability to keep the professionals, the inability to meet the turnover requirements, the inability as well to provide us with completed track records. And some of them we have discovered through our relationships with the National Department of Housing and the NHBRC that they would have been engaged in developing houses somewhere in the Eastern Cape, somewhere in the Northwest. And these RDP houses are practically not complete. And this type of stock is now under rehabilitation. So the question and the challenge becomes, where does it put the CIDB? Should we carry on and say, no, it's normal business, we want to give you a grade? The risk, again, is on the taxpayer's purse, because the money that has been disbursed in favor of this contractor who has not completed this type of project comes from all of us. So, partly those are some of the reasons. However, I would like to stress that downgrade is a matter of last resort. And I would like, I mean, even Mr. Chair came to see us. He had with us and we spoke extensively about this issue. And we said that we are actually on a different trajectory in as far as addressing this issue is concerned. I've addressed this thing relating to that came from Honorable Sithole. And I'd like to go to the moratorium and downgrade. Well, the issue of the moratorium, the chairperson has dealt with it. I don't think I can add anything that is either positive or negative around it. And, well, the issue regarding the finances, I've as well, touched on it to say that there are three ways that we are looking into, or three things that we are looking into, being the risk that us as taxpayers through government needs are exposed to, and as the official body that manages this risk, what is it that we say government needs to actually mitigate for or against, and in such a manner, it's imperative that we say business practices must prevail over emotions. It is fine to tell us that you've actually built the Republic in 1940 or whenever, and we appreciate that part, and we always say that, record this type of affair, give us the paperwork. When we actually look into this type of things, it becomes quite imperative, and we will advise you to say that you can be RPL, which sits outside of the confines of the CADB, but, with relevant departments, etc., etc. And that comes predominantly at grade 1 levels, where you find that contractors, some of them, have got skills. They are saying that I have tiled this type of a building, I have done the following. We appreciate that, but we then say that, put it in something in writing. I mean, I can quote from our engagement in Limpopo, a member there of the construction fraternity, Mr. Salamlela, said that I have built all these schools, and he brought the photos, and he said, Mr. Salamlela, go look for the school governing bodies. Grab us this document that they would have given you. The gentleman came to the CID, we would have given it the grade. Because we didn't want the photos, we wanted factual, scientifically crafted documents that could prove the ability of the contractor. I think from our side, as the Register of Contractors, as the chairperson and Mr. Mongayana, CEO has alluded to that, on the bedrock of contractor registration in this country. We do have challenges, and challenges have been highlighted, but our trajectory and our practice is that contractors first, everything else last, and ethics first, and everything else last. I'd like to thank you.
Thank you, and over to you. Do you have anything to say? Okay.
Thank you, Honourable Members. The portfolio that I hold is on procurement and delivery at the CIDB. And for the last 6-7 years, the CIDB has promulgated rules regarding the procurement and the rules that apply to the public sector in engaging contractors. We have taken on a responsibility called training and capacitation, and I refer here specifically to the qualification for slide 5. We cannot put these rules into place and not educate the public sector on how these rules apply. But we are not a training institution, we are a regulatory body. And it has become almost taking over our portfolio in terms of training. Now, the training that we supply is basic training. How do you put your tender document together? What are the standard rules that apply if you're a public sector organization? What should you expect from a tender? How do you evaluate your tender documents if you are calling for infrastructure services? Now, there's a fine line between what we are doing and what the National Treasury is doing. And, of course, if you look at a municipality, they also procure pens and paper, and they are procuring infrastructure projects. So that individual that is seated as head of supply chain has got to wear two hats. And at times, he doesn't know which hat he is wearing, because one is a specialist field. You need to understand infrastructure projects, you need to understand the downstream effects of making the wrong choices in terms of your procurement strategy. And this is where things are starting to fall apart. Because if you don't plan correctly on an infrastructure project, you end up with all sorts of things going wrong in the downstream effect. What we have done is we've started a skills development program for construction procurement practitioners. Now, this is not our specialist field. So we are talking to institutions, tertiary institutions, whose business it is to teach and to educate. And you've heard my colleagues talk about the fact that we are actually a standards-driven entity. We have to put in standards for the levels at which we expect competence from this industry. So going forward and in our coming business plan, we actually want to start accrediting the people that are doing this work in the public sector. And this will relate to my comments later on the issues of compliance. What we are doing in the interim period, because setting competence standards for people that work on infrastructure projects is not an easy task. We are currently investigating where do these competence need to lie and who should have this competence. Currently, we are looking at our construction contact centers, which is our footprints in the provinces, beefing up that capacity so that we work better with our stakeholders, specifically being our public sector organizations. So we're looking at bringing in more staff that can work with stakeholders, that can advise them better, and that can give them the proper guidance that they are looking for. In terms of information of which clients we have trained, we have a database of information, and we can make that readily available to you. We ensure training across the country, but it's based on clients coming to us to say, I don't know what to do here. Can you come to me, and we can train you? But we will give you the reports on those. The one thing I must mention here is training is continuous, and this is posing to be a problem to us. And I'm talking again about the basic training that we do. Public sector departments are facing numerous challenges, one of them being turnover of staff and resources. So you've got to constantly train them so that there is that level of understanding continuously, so that they don't do the right thing in April and then start falling apart as the year goes on, which is currently the case. Again, I want to highlight to you that there is a major difference between what we are doing and the National Treasury. There are some problems with the way we administer our regulations in terms of supply chain management, but we have formed a determined task team between us and the National Treasury to work out these problems, because the last thing we want to do is confuse the entities out there. We actually need to give them proper guidance. Okay, I want to move on now to the issue of compliance, which has been brought up by many of the honourable members. The first thing that needs to be said is the CIDP has very limited powers when it comes to what we can do with the public sector departments that are not complying. We have, for this reason, forged a very important relationship with the Special Investigations Unit. If you look at the regulations that we've put in place, it basically allows us to identify a client for non-performance, to bring them through for a hearing where we hear their side. They are the alteram partem rule. So we hear what the charge is and how do they plead. And if they are guilty, then a fine is issued. Now, if the fine is paid, the guy goes back to work and then it's business as usual. So he can actually transgress again, which means we've got to continuously monitor. So the SIU has been brought on board because they have criminal powers, something that we don't have. But I think very important here is for me to make the point that the CIDB is doing the best that it can to monitor an entire industry. Let's just understand, we're talking about 283 municipalities alone. At provincial level, we talk about 27 departments that are doing infrastructure delivery. At national level, we have about 10, and there's a host of parastatals. The division that we have as compliance and enforcement has very limited resources, and we are going to the best of our ability with those resources. I'd like to now focus on the issue raised by my board chairperson and my acting CEO on the audit blitz that was conducted. The problem with our monitoring and enforcement portfolio is we've been very reactive up to now. What happens is if there is an issue of non-compliance. We rely on the industry. We rely on contractors that are aggrieved. We rely on peers, the normal citizen, good citizen, to report this to us. We've got a hotline. We've got emails. You know, they can walk into our CCCs and they report this. It goes onto a database and a whole set of processes, business processes would kick into it. First, we've got to investigate to make sure it's a legitimate claim. And then we've got to go through a whole investigation. And this is an expensive exercise because we use external people to help us here. What we have done from April for the first time is we've issued an audit blitz across a sampling of public sector institutions. In that sample, we identified 97 institutions across the provinces. We specifically targeted our public works family. So all provincial departments of public works, national, and a host of a sprinkling of other clients have been included in this audit. Not surprising, we found levels of non-compliance that are really very worrying. But let's just look at what the audit list was actually focused on. Our first port of call is the iTender system. The iTender system is where we first start interacting with our clients in terms of the advert that they put out. Now, the advert would identify the grade of contractor, the specialist field, and the grade would give an indication of where more or less the estimate of this tender lies. The desktop study that we did is we looked at the websites of all these 97 clients and how have they advertised this tender. Gross non-compliance in terms of putting that advert on the CIDB iTender system. Now, the value add that the iTender system has for our contractors is any contractor above grade 7, he will get an SMS notification or an email or both to give him an indication of where the work is actually happening. So if the client doesn't get the information onto this iTender system, that contractor has to rely on the Gazette notice. Some of them don't have access to the Gazette. If the project is below grade 7, then the contractors that are registered in that province, two grades above the grade that has been identified in the advert, will get the SMS notification. Of course, if it's a PE contractor, which is a potential emerging contractor, then it goes to one grade below. So the gross levels of non-compliance that I speak about is where clients have not made use of this iTender system. So we as the CIDB have not been able to demonstrate that value add to our clients, to our contractors. So the contractors have had to make use of the newspapers or the Gazette to understand where the projects are. And some of the frustrations that you pick up in the provinces is because they don't know where the projects are. Okay. The second issue that the audit blitz targeted was the register of projects. And here I think there's going to be a special appeal to this House to try and help us to significantly beef up the information on this register of projects. According to the CIDB Act, the register was put in place to look at the nature, the size, the value, the distribution of projects. Right now, you and I have no idea where infrastructure projects are, who has it been awarded to, what value are those projects, has the contractor reached first delivery yet, has he done it to the satisfaction of the client. That information is supposed to be published on our website. Before the audit blitz started, we've had about 10% compliance to this register, which means we've got our hands tied behind our back. We don't have access to information to do proper analysis. Is the construction industry growing? Which province is it growing better? Why is it growing? Is there better access to work? Are those departments actually functioning better? Do they understand the prescripts? None of this can be shared with you today because the information is not on that system. What do we do about these clients that are non-compliant? Again, I refer back to my comment about our limited powers. All we can do is fine. But that's good enough for now. Because if we find them, it's got to go into the financial statements, it's got to be declared to you, and it gets reported to the Auditor General, so it means an automatic qualification. So that's the big stick that we have with the public sector. Let me just tell you about what has happened since the 97 guys have been informed of the non-compliance. There's been a hurried rush to their computers to get the data on. And this is exactly what we wanted. So the word is spreading. We are watching our systems. We are looking at a very steady uptake since May of the data onto our system. So it's working, but it has to move faster. I think this audit blitz has created the awareness that we were looking for, but it needs a lot more commitment from the public sector. I think I've covered issues on the issue of the fronting. I think it's important to note again that we can't really do anything about fronting other than report it to the Special Investigations Unit, because fronting is a national crime. It is stipulated in the National Treasury provisions to the Preferential Procurement Act that if you are found to be fronting, then it's a criminal offence. So at the moment, any reports of fronting that we receive via our hotline is referred to the Special Investigations Unit to deal with. I'm not sure if there's any other issues that I'm supposed to respond on, but I will take further questions on this. Thank you. Other members, are you coming in?
Yeah.
Okay. Over to you.
Yes, yes. Just a few other issues to touch on that have been raised by the honorable members. One issue is with regards to the corrective action plan, which I have indicated that we have that the plan is in place. It's already been presented to the board. It's also been presented to the audit committee. And as I also mentioned, it's got the timelines within which the issues will be resolved and who the responsible officials are to resolve those issues, and the specific action to take to resolve the issues. Going to the issue of the suspended staff members, there were 5 staff members who were suspended initially. 2 of them resigned. One of them, we dropped the charges, and 2 are still on charges, but they are still with us. They are still being paid. They are still working with us. The challenge that we have is that the wheels are turning very slowly at the CCMA, yeah, in terms of that matter. So, but we are pursuing those disciplinary charges, you know, against them. There were 2 members who resigned, and one of them was the one who was responsible for looking after the contract that we incurred the fruitless expenditure for. We can't follow up with them since they've left our employment now. But systems have actually been put in place now to guard against that from reoccurring. And then also taking me to the irregular expenditure themselves. Yes, we have put systems and controls in place to ensure that there's no repetition of those matters. Such as the capacitation of the area itself in supply chain management is also one of the challenges that we had in that area. The other matter was with regards to overall training of staff, not only related to SCM itself, but exposure of all staff members within the CIDB. Why? Because our SCM unit is still a young unit, still growing and all that. So we're doing that exposure. In fact, from Monday, we're starting with leadership again, you know, based on these issues that have actually been raised, because these are matters that we realize that there is a lack of also understanding of some of the policies, the regulations from National Treasury that we need to comply with. So leadership started the whole of next week. We're doing training actually on supply chain management across the CIDB. Bad debts written off from Mr. Estraiza, I think. Honourable member.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, okay. Sorry. These are once off that we're doing. It's some of the issues are actually coming out of the wash as we do our cleanup exercise with regards to debtors that have been outstanding for a long period. It's actually related to those fruitless expenditure, you know, amount, I think there's 13,000 and then the other one is about 45,000 and all that. It is related to that, because what had happened is that when we paid in those years, we paid you yourself instead of him. So then we said that you still owe us because we paid you money that you shouldn't have actually received. So we've been actually in attempting to recover that money from the contractors concerned. And within the 3-year period, as prescribed also in the, National Treasury prescripts and all that, we've exhausted all means of really trying to recover and all that, and they're no longer contractors in our books anymore, which we could have had, you know, a leg to stand on or a hold, you know, against them. So we have to write those off as well. Moving on. Oh yes, yeah. The staff members, the chairperson of our board has indicated that the staff members who are disabled staff members issues. We do have a plan in place now. I think 3 vacancies have actually been identified for recruitment to be recruitment for disabled people. And I think we'll be implementing that within the next couple of months going forward. One of them is a receptionist position that is actually available currently. The breakdown that we have here with regard to unskilled and unskilled and semi-skilled, I think it is, yeah. It's according to the Employment Equity Act, according to that schedule, you know, that's the allocation, you know, that we actually are doing. It's based on that. The other issue was, about the quarterly reports, it's noted we will submit the reports to the committee as well on a regular basis. Hope I've covered everything with regards to this. Yeah, if there's any other issues, if I could just be reminded, please.
Are there any questions not attended to? No, I was thinking whether we do have the risk management.
Thank you. Honourable Member, we do have a risk management. Indeed, we do have a risk management policy. It's actually a portfolio that we've now elevated. It was not as strong as we would have liked it to be previously, a couple of 2 years or so ago. But it's actually now one of our key areas, you know, for control purposes that we actually utilise.
Honourable
Member,
follow up.
First of all, Chairperson, thanks. Is to appreciate the unqualified report, although there are areas of emphasis by the auditor general. At the first point, actually, I would ask the same question about the risk management team. If you do have it, that before the books go to the auditor general, they are checked inside, but you said you do. Okay. Secondly, is to check if the chairperson made mention of the fact that the CIDB would like to have something to fight if it comes to a push. If there are any policy issues that maybe need to be addressed, you are free to come to us. Although you report to TPW, we would like to assist as much as possible, because we also note some of the issues that need your attention at ground level. So whatever policy issues that need to be tightened, or we would like to assist as much as possible. Yes,
thank you, Avakila.
No, it's not a follow-up, Chairperson. It's just that the proposed amendment document, can the committee get a copy of that, Chairperson? And just lastly, I think this was a very positive engagement with the new board. At least we talk with somebody who understands what's happening, and keep it up. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. Are we all done?
Yes.
CIDB, we have come to the end of our meeting. No. Everybody is folding it. Yes, all right, folks. CIDB, thank you very much for your openness and your engagement with the stakeholders out there, and also the relationship that you have created with DBW entities, IDT, Agreement, CBA. We really appreciate it, because there won't be duplication if you interact and iron out whatever. At the beginning, I said there were loose ends that you need to tighten. And I hope that in our next interaction, maybe next financial year, we won't be dealing with the issues that were raised here. We'll go and deal with them. I remember at the beginning of the meeting, outside this meeting, the chairperson requested that they would really like to meet us as a committee. And without consulting you members, I said that's fine. And I hope it's fine for us to meet them. And on the amendments that are there, we'd like to get a briefing from you so that you can also be on board. The date that you have been given as CIDB, yeah, on our agenda is the 25th of October. So that's the day that we'll meet you. And make sure that we can get copies a week before. I don't know whether it will be possible or not. And secondly, we'd like to apologize because in our interaction with our secretary, you were not informed about this meeting, I'm told. And you only heard about it yesterday. And we really appreciate and thank you for coming. I don't know what the problems are, because as I'm sitting here, IDT is also having the same problem of them not informed. They were only informed yesterday around 9 o'clock. I don't know what's happening. So thank you very much for coming to our meeting. And go well, drive safely, and everything of the best. Thank you.